Game on, sports geeks. It's time for another Grand Slam edition of Inside the Locker right here on oneofus.net. And by Grand Slam, we only partially mean the Denny's breakfast platter. I am joined on the field by the teen titans of the gridiron, JC DeLeon.
Hello.
Elliot Fontanette.
Booyah!
And our neighbor, Adam Charles.
Yeah!
Gentlemen, you are the biggest Bleacher dorks I know. And this is one of the few nerdy podcasts that doesn't believe ESPN is one of Professor X's powers. How are you guys doing today after I'm done with all the shtick here?
That was great, though.
you can answer the question, no, I promise. This is like not the
You're not
going to
read
part.
Our mind or say no. We have a really groovy mutation?
Yes, okay. Groovy mutations and whatnot. Are they still doing... They're still doing... Days of Future Past, right?
Yeah, they're doing Days of Future Past.
I'm just kidding. I have to cover every fucking element of that.
You sound so excited.
I hate movie news so much. Hey, but speaking of things, we want to let you guys know that Inside the Locker, just like all our content on One of Us, is available on iTunes. Just search One of Us in the podcast section. You can also follow this show on Twitter at ITLcast. And I want to encourage you, if you do go on iTunes and you like what we do, please give us a 5-star rating and leave a review. iTunes likes that, and so do we. Yes, but before we move on, let's give the big foam middle finger to sobriety and tumble right into the beer bucket. This is going to be an interesting edition, I think, of the beer bucket because we had a party here last weekend and I'm pretty sure we got completely cleaned out. So, Elliot, what did you find to drink in the house?
Yeah, I said fuck the beer bucket and I have some rum.
You had the beer bucket.
Yeah, fuck the beer bucket. There's some rum around. So, like, and I like to be like Captain Jack as much as possible, and I want to be able to say, but why is the rum gone? So I have rum and some cherry coke.
So you're trying to be the person who is the answer to the question, why is the rum gone?
Yes.
All right. I like it. JC, did you find anything?
I'm drinking a DRP Epper.
I like that. That's a really nice craft beer. I like it.
It's really weak. I don't think there's any beer in this at all.
Yeah. So it's like, a Coors Light?
It looks like it's the D-et version of it.
It's the Diet. The Diet version. But it has zero calories, so, you know, good, yeah. That's good.
Well, that's good, I suppose. Adam, how about you?
Elliot fixed my drink for me, technically, so it's whatever.
So it's roofied?
It's wherever you put in it.
Did you also make him a rum and cherry coke?
Movie Colada, whatever.
Oh no, he's gone. We've lost him already. I am actually drinking a strawberry blonde from that brewery in Arizona. Pine, Arizona, to be exact. This is a growler that my wife brought home, and it is delicious.
Yeah, I had some of that on Saturday. It was really, really good.
And drinking it out of my Baratheon... Ours is the Fury.
Ours.
Nice, nice.
A gift from our friend Ryan Brace. That is refreshing. But moving on, before we get into the scores and stories, guys, let's hear some cheers from the cheap seats. We actually got some fan questions this week.
We have fans?
I guess. Or people that don't hate us enough to not talk to us.
They don't hate us.
Woo! Okay. So the first question comes from J.R. Molina, who asks... Who do you consider to be the best sports team of all time in real life or fiction?
Okay, I got my answer for both.
Well, then give it, Elliot. That's how this works.
Okay. Are you saying I should just give it?
Just give it.
Okay.
Give it.
Okay, I would say the TC Titans from Remember the Titans.
Yeah?
Because they had to come together and, you know, accomplish something. And they did. And that's at its sports best, that's what you do.
But they were the number two team in the country, so they can't be the best
team. Hey, don't be a ranking slave.
It depends on how you define best. If I'm saying best just in terms of win-loss, I go with the 70-10 Bulls.
That was going to be my answer.
Wait, okay. You mean in the future? In the post-apocalyptic time of 70-10?
Boo! Okay.
I don't understand. Do you think they'll still have basketball
the 70 wins,
in the wasteland?
The 70-win, 10-loss Bulls.
Well, we have to, like, face mutants and, and people with three eyes.
Yeah, I know. That game is called Fallout 23. It's Fallout Jumpman 23.
It's the NBA 7K10. I like that. Okay, we can do that. Elliot, thank you for your answer. JC, what is your answer?
I can expand upon the 72 and 10 Bulls.
72.
Okay. Ooh. 200 years further in the future.
I fully give it up. JC is the brain.
You do give it up. That's why you're on this show.
Like, JC is like a steel trap of sports knowledge.
The 72 and 10 Bulls, at the time, actually was not really a Bulls fan because, you know, Barkley was always my favorite player. And so the Bulls being that dominant at the time wasn't really my favorite thing. But they were such an incredibly dominant team. I remember towards the end of the season, their ninth or tenth loss was to the Detroit Pistons. And Doug Collins was the coach at the time. And it was such a big deal to defeat this team in the regular season towards the end where it didn't really matter so much. It meant so much to Doug Collins that he actually cried on the court as soon as they won, which is a little ridiculous, but yeah,
it's not ridiculous.
That's what it meant to defeat that team.
So that's your answer, the 72 and 10 Bulls?
Yeah. Because
if I keep saying 72-10, I'm going to keep thinking that, like Mel Gibson played for them and had a really awesome dune buggy that he traveled around in from game to game.
Yeah, so. I'd have to do a lot of thinking to come up with a fictional team, but I mean, we talked about Mighty Ducks 2 last week, and that's true.
That'd be sort of gay porn hard.
Yeah.
Would be a little gay porn hard. Adam, what is your answer to this question?
I think if I was going to pick a team that probably best exemplified just pure dominance, it would, you know what, it would probably be the team that, which you guys also talked about last week with Neil in the film Miracle, but the Russians practically dominated hockey or world hockey for almost, what, 2 decades?
Mm-hmm.
Roughly?
Yeah.
And I mean, dominated, purely dominated. I mean, they practically own the sport. So I think it's hard to compete with something like that. Maybe the 1960s Boston Celtics teams as well. Although probably in that time frame, there was, I guess the competition level wasn't nearly as, probably as prominent as it was for the 72-10 Bulls. So I think if I was going to pick a team, it probably would be Russian hockey team from the 1960s through
1960s through like early 80s, yeah,
something like that.
Yeah,
I think my first instinct is to say Team Jacob, but given that we don't make Twilight jokes on this show,
I have a switchblade right here.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to go with the 1972 Miami Dolphins. Sorry, only team to go undefeated in the NFL. Suck it, Pats!
Fun fact, an offensive lineman from that team went to my high school.
How old are you?
Went to my high school, didn't go to high school with me.
Okay.
It's like, JC's actually a Time Lord.
Yeah, I was like, dude, where's your scarf and your police box?
I graduated when I was negative 10.
Are you Benjamin Buttoning? God damn it, JC, I knew it. I had like 1,000 theories about you, and that was like the 800th, so... All right. Well, that was a good question. Thank you very much, Mr. Molina. And the second question comes from Jason Tull, who asks, which NFL teams do you expect a reversal of fortune? In other words, a former playoff team going 5-11 and a losing team going to the postseason. So in other words, who's going to have a big turnaround either for the better or for the worse in this upcoming football season?
I got to say, for me, and I know I'm biased because I'm from New Orleans, but the Saints, they got the coach back. They're going to be back this year.
Yeah, I would actually put money on that.
Yeah.
I would put, like, I don't know if I would call it a bet so much as a bounty on the New Orleans Saints doing better next year. So, and now it'd be a bounty on anyone who disagreed with that statement.
Yeah, we should just call them the New Orleans Boba Fetts.
Right.
I would like that.
No, that's cool. I accept that Boba Fett is the most ineffectual bounty hunter of all time. I mean, let's really think about this for a second. Ignore the fact that you don't notice that Lando Calrissian is standing right next to you in the worst disguise known to man. Just let that go for a second. How about the fact that the minute you actually get involved in anything at all in this war, you clumsily fly onto some kind of speeder, get your gun sliced in half, fall down, and then as you try to take on somebody else, you get whacked in the jetpack, fly into the sailing barge of Jabba the Hutt, knock yourself out, and roll into the Sarlacc pit. You are the worst bounty hunter since Greedo.
I can argue that.
No, you can't. Yes, I literally... Can. All right.
Yes, I can.
All right, go for it.
Here's the thing. He's fighting a Jedi. That's a lost... It's a lost art. It's something he's never come up against before. So Luke has a complete element of surprise, and you can't train for something you don't know.
So it was a Jedi who Keystone copped him into the Sarlacc pit? No, it was Han goddamn Solo accidentally whacking him with a stick. And it's like, Boba Fett, where? Ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba, dead!
Yeah, but you can't put that all on Boba Fett.
I literally just did.
But that's Lucas. Lucas was already going shitty by the third one.
Well, now you're changing the argument.
I'm giving a good argument. Now you're like, I don't want to
talk about this. No. If we're talking about Boba Fett as an effectual bounty hunter... He's okay. First of all, what was the question we were answering? Because I have completely forgotten.
The NFL team that's going to change fortunes.
Oh yeah, JC, do you have an actual answer for this?
I do.
Okay,
sort of sound like a Leon.
So in the AFC South, I don't think the Houston Texans are going to have it wrapped up in a bow like they did last year, and so I think the Indianapolis Colts are going to take that.
Well, which is funny because the Colts really had a huge upswing. Bless you. The Colts really had their big upswing turnaround last year, going from 2-14 to, what was it, 10-6, 11?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 10-6, I think. They made the playoffs.
Well, they got a little lucky, though.
You mean Andrew Luck? Is that what you're referring to?
That's not what I meant.
Because that's not luck, motherfucker. That's good drafting.
Yeah.
He was basically working with a skeleton crew, because every year, the Colts higher-ups decide they're going to send somebody else off from our, like, oh, this guy's really good, fuck him, he's gone. Can't afford to pay this guy, fuck him, he's gone. The banners outside Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis aren't even tied on. They're Velcro now, just so they can rip them down really quickly and put somebody else up. Yeah, the only veteran that we really have left is Reggie Wayne. I mean, everybody else in one... I mean, there are a couple other guys. I don't mean to shortchange them. But, I mean, for all intents and purposes, we're talking about Reggie Wayne, and everybody else has either been unceremoniously dumped or have gone to other teams. So, even in spite of that, Andrew Luck was able to turn our season around big time, which tells me two things. One, he's got a lot of talent. And two, he's a natural leader. So, I absolutely agree that... Maybe not to that exact degree, but I definitely think the Colts are going to continue to have success under Andrew Luck.
Okay,
well, and that's the thing. Of the three rookie quarterbacks who did really well last year, RG3, Russell Wilson, and Andrew Luck, I got to figure that RG3 is going to be the one who's going to have a little bit of a sophomore slump, similar to the way Cam Newton did. Pocket passing quarterbacks tend to stay consistent, and I think a second year is only going to help him get that much better.
You know, I'm actually an RG3 fan, but if you did watch a good portion of the first half of the season, a lot of his big play stats were literally just chunk. Like, he just chunked the ball. He chunked the ball up, and luckily, his receiver got it.
Yeah.
That's not his
play in college was that one where it got tipped up in the air, and it ended up being a 93-yard touchdown.
Right, and that's not to downplay...
It bounced off the guy's helmet?
Yeah.
That's not to downplay the actual talent of RG3.
He's totally a
fantastic talent, and he's a
trilogy.
He will be...
Yes, he is the return of the... Yeah. Are we really going to go back to that, Damon
Elliott? He's not the return of the Jedi, he's the return of the Mac. That's what he is.
Once again, Elliot. Once again, you are fired.
But I think the most impressive thing about Andrew Luck is I think he did actually... Of the three rookie quarterbacks coming in, he had the worst to work with. I mean, as far as everybody else on the team, he has a superstar with Reggie Wayne, but practically nothing else. And that's impressive. The fact that he could take, as a rookie, take a team with very little to... A team that literally was 2-14 the year prior.
Yeah.
And take them to the playoffs. It's very impressive.
Yeah, it wouldn't necessarily be a reversal of fortune because they did make it to the playoffs last year, but I don't think they're getting a wild card slot this year. I think they're going to take that division.
I'm going to say that I don't have a lot of faith that the Baltimore Ravens are going to have another season such as they did this year for a couple reasons. One, Ray Lewis is, you know, regardless of what you think of the guy and how many people he's stabbed, he is the heart of that defense, and they are definitely going to feel his loss. They've also lost Bolden. They've lost
Ed Reed.
They lost Lou Reed.
Bolden's
Ed
a big
they lost
loss.
Ed Reed?
Yeah, Ed Reed is in Houston.
He was the best
now.
Player on their team.
Well, this is what I'm saying. So it's inevitable. Whenever a team wins a Super Bowl, you're going to... I mean, if you look at the... like, I'll just because I have the most frame of reference with this team, if you look at what happened after the Colts won the Super Bowl, nearly every player whose name got mentioned in a favorable way during the playoffs to get us to the Super Bowl was gone by the next year. It's inevitable. It happens.
Gotta get paid.
Because suddenly their worth goes up.
Yeah, not to mention Flacco's got his money now, and so he may not necessarily...
God. Talk about a short-sighted investment. you might as well have invested in, like, Enron or one of the internet bubble companies right around 2000. I mean, short-sighted... I mean, the guy, yes, he's a good quarterback. Is he worth all of the money in sports?
No.
Such that the rest of your team, you have trouble keeping the other guys on your team, who arguably are more responsible for your getting to the Super Bowl. Probably not. But yeah, I still think my pick is going to be the Baltimore Ravens. I think they'll do well. I think they will probably still end up winning that division just because I haven't seen a lot of spark from the Steelers.
Cincinnati could take that division.
Pittsburgh could too.
I don't see it happening. I could be wrong. I could absolutely be wrong. I just don't see it happening. And nobody's really holding a torch for the Cleveland Browns. Even the people in Cleveland are like, yeah, we might finish third.
Well, even Cleveland. I mean, Cleveland, even last year, they were in a lot of close games. I mean, they were still a team that you didn't necessarily want to see from week to week. They didn't win a lot of their games, but they took a lot of the teams they played to the brink.
I was going
to
say, if the Super Bowl were decided over a game of horseshoes, that would be great. But what
our neighbor Adam is saying is that, you know, perhaps they might mature this year and get over that hump.
Correct. Just might do it.
They're a young team with they're bringing back the majority of their players, and you're talking about Baltimore, who are not bringing back a majority of their core players.
That's
Ray
true.
Lewis, Ed Reed.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as the defense goes, they still got two superstars, but two of the actual direct leaders of that team, of that side of the ball, are gone.
Yeah. Which team, I was thinking of Baltimore and I was thinking of Terrell Suggs, but it reminded me, is Ndamukong Suh, is he on Detroit?
He's in Detroit.
Yeah. How come we haven't heard more from him? Because he was a beast when he came
Because
out.
He spends more time, you know, getting fined and sitting in the commissioner's office than he does
and
on the goddamn
stomping on
field.
Heads and...
That's right, I remember that.
Yeah, he's a fucking head case. The guy's
he's a
talented.
Pro Bowl. He's a Pro Bowl head case.
He's a Pro Bowl head case.
So is he a Dallas Cowboy from the 90s?
Shut up.
Just saying. can I go get him some cocaine? And be like, you are honorary Dallas Cowboy.
Three Cowboys players sitting in a car. Who's driving? The police!
I do like the fact, though, that for the first year that Ndamukong Suh made it into the league, he had so many endorsements that you don't see him on commercials anymore at all.
No.
he is no longer one of the Subway guys.
I will say that he should still be promoting legal counsel in the area of Detroit, because first of all, his last name is Sue, and secondly,
nice.
He spends a lot of time in a lawyer's office anyway, so they might as well use him.
Yeah, put him to use.
So those were the shouts from, or the cheers from, whatever we call
Hold
it.
Hold on, I didn't say my team.
You didn't say your team?
I didn't say my team, I just downplayed all yours.
He expanded upon my answer.
That's good, because now I can edit out me tripping over the name of that segment, so please, bail me out.
I think the team that I would pick would actually have a reversal of fortune this year. The Saints are a good one. I would expect the Kansas City Chiefs to have a season similar to what the Colts had last season.
Oh yeah, I think that's a good choice. I think they're posed. Here's the thing, though, with the Kansas City,
they can
Chiefs.
Only go up.
Exactly.
So.
It's a safe choice because it's like, yes, they've got a much better quarterback, they have a much better coach, they still had the most players in the Pro Bowl despite their terrible record.
Right.
Yeah. The Kansas City Chiefs had more players in the Pro Bowl than anybody else. So there is talent on that team.
You got to figure at some point Dwayne Bowe's going to know like how talented he is.
Yeah, and then they can't afford him anymore, so yeah. Let's hope that doesn't happen too soon. But yeah, now you've got Alex Smith coming in, and you have Andy Reid coming in to coach. So, you have all of the necessary elements for a complete turnaround, and as you said, they can really only go up. But they win two games last year.
Yep, and they're in a pretty weak, as far as the AFC is concerned, they're in a very weak division.
So
they're not, I mean, it's...
They're not going to take it from Denver, but they could.
No,
they
but
could
it's, just
beat
Denver,
out,
it's just Denver.
Yeah, yeah, they could beat out Oakland and San Diego.
Oh, it's very likely that they can beat out both of those teams.
So you're saying that basically the Kansas City Chiefs are like the Gohan in Dragon Ball Z of the league, where they haven't shown their full power yet?
I'm not saying any of that at all.
Yes, they're just like somebody's Dragon Balls. That's exactly what we've been saying. But hopefully they'll stop Dragon Balls and get to work and become a better team. Because frankly, it's the Denver Broncos, the Kansas City Chiefs, and then a couple of also-ran shit-sippers. So, yeah. And thanks once again for submitting your questions, fans out there. We have had our cheers from the cheap seats. I got it that time. So we're going to move on to scores and stories. And of course, there's no way we couldn't start with this first headline, which is entitled...
A-Roid.
A-Roid. Yep, they finally did it. Professional baseball has finally handed down A-Rod's suspension for his role in the Biogenesis scandal. It's 211 games, which
Boo.
Is the most severe penalty lobbed since the 1919 Black Sox era. I'm just going to let you guys start, because I'm...
It's a disgrace. They should have banned them for life.
Yeah?
It's not a deterrent.
Yeah. Nothing is being deterred at this particular moment, and he is still a giant deterred. JC, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it should have been a lifetime ban. He shouldn't... The rule that allows him to play while he's appealing is just stupid.
Yes.
Yeah, and, I mean, turnabout is fair play. In his second game, which is last night, he actually got beamed. He didn't actually.
He didn't get beaten. He got skate.
He didn't get beaten. He pulled some more of his A-Rod antics. It looked like the ball hit him, and the umpire gave him a hit by pitch, but the catcher caught it. That means they didn't hit him.
I believe the scientific term for that is playing like a total bitch, just like A-Rod has done his entire career.
Yeah. Or Chris Boshing.
Chris Boshing. That is the baseball equivalent of a flop.
Yeah. It is, and the whole time he's trotting up to the first base, he's got the biggest shit-eating grin on his face, so he's got away with a hit-by-pitch.
He's literally like the kid who thought he was going to get in trouble, and then... Actually, that's a pretty interesting metaphor for what happened with this biogenesis thing, because he acted really hurt, and then as soon as he thought nobody was looking, he was like, ha, I got away with it, which is exactly what he's doing right now, and just defiantly laughing in the face of Bud Selig and the game itself. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Adam, what do you think?
I agree. It was it's too little, but I mean, most people could probably at this point care less about A-Rod. By the time he comes back, if he even decides to come back, which he probably will decide to come back, he's gonna be met with probably what he's been met with for the past couple games, which is just straight up boos from the fans of his team, from the fans of every other team. He's gonna be the most despised player in the league. Honestly, I don't know. I wouldn't know exactly what it is that you would want to come back to something like that, but you know he's not going to come back to being the A-Rod that he was, A-Roid.
Yeah.
Or that was A-Roid. So, I mean, he's going to have probably subpar production, and I can't see a positive, I guess going beyond the 211 game suspension, a positive reason for him to even want to come back. But overall, I mean, it's...
His ego alone is going to make him come back.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you don't want to go out. You want to go out on your own terms, but probably by doing so, he's going to go out with like a 190 average season, maybe hitting something like that, or maybe being second straight.
Yeah.
So, he's getting brushed under the rug. That's what I think.
In the interest of being totally objective, this is the first argument I will make. I got an email from a New York Yankees fan. Who wanted to, I won't say his name because I don't really know if he wanted me to tell people he sent this email, but basically what he was saying was the New York fan perspective is basically, we don't want this guy either. He has been nothing but a nuisance and an attention-grabbing eyesore for the longest time. Fans in New York are sick of this too.
So he's a lightning rod?
Yes, he's a lightning rod. Yeah, God damn it, Elliot. That was a terrible joke I just made. So, I will say, seeing it from their perspective, I want to reiterate again, this has nothing to do with the team that he plays for. If he played for the Minnesota Twins, I would have just as much bile for these reasons. One, the appeals process is a fucking joke.
Yep.
The appeals process, but he's officially appealed the decision because apparently he thinks getting caught cheating is no cause for punishment. That's just being ridiculous. And literally, spending this whole time negotiating how many games he would be suspended and how much money he's going to get back on his contract. I tweeted this, but him trying to get money back on a contract after being caught cheating and suspended is like somebody getting caught counting cards at a casino and then trying to take chips off the table as they're being thrown out the door. It's like, no, I'm sorry, that money that you got by cheating, you are not entitled to that. That's not yours anymore. Yeah. You have no claim over that money. And then this whole, like, he seriously needs to go on Dancing with the Stars the way he evaded every fucking question. Did not actually admit to using, but didn't deny it. No apology. Actually saying things like, oh, the last few months have been hell for me. And I'm like, really? Because I'm sure your hundreds of millions of dollars, of ill-gotten dollars, probably helped that. You fucking prat. In addition to that, the way ESPN has been covering this makes me want to vomit. Because they have been painting him as this embattled superstar who's facing adversity with grace. They literally had a segment for, I mean, I'm going to ignore the fact that they cut in to their SportsCenter coverage just to show us his third at bat in a meaningless game against the White Sox, just to be like, yes, he's the guy we're talking about, and let's see what he's doing right this second. Nobody cares. Go back to SportsCenter. And then they literally had a montage of him at all these press conferences answering questions with this like inspirational music in the background, and it's just like, stop it. Get off your knees. The guy's a cheat. We're over this. When Lance Armstrong admitted, or finally was caught cheating, however you want to view that situation, ESPN turned on him like rabid dogs. And for some reason, they're treating A-Rod like he's a victim. And that has got to stop. I am tired of it.
Yeah, well, it's weird because they essentially turned on Barry Bonds the same way once... once he was a free agent and nobody would sign him, then ESPN was like, all right, well, fuck this guy. We're just going to treat him like we do any other cheater.
Yeah, and I've heard the arguments, you know, oh, other players have cheated. Why does A-Rod deserve more punishment? Because A-Rod continued to cheat over and over and over again. A-Rod was the highest paid player in the Major League Baseball, meaning that he was the most rewarded for his cheating. And also, fucking A-Rod is recruiting people, other people to cheat. Like, I don't even understand why this is an argument.
And the thing is, your righteous indignation, and this is not to insult you, but you're right, this is just the way we all are, your righteous impotent indignation is why this is such a bad penalty. Because it's not a penalty. It's just 211 games.
And he's not even going to serve that. He's going to play out the rest of the season while it's in. This is the thing I was trying to finish before, is that the period of appeals means that by the time that even gets to an arbitrator's desk, the season will be over. So this whole, like, he's banned until the end of 2014 season. No, he'll probably play through spring training in 2014. And by the time he serves the suspension, it'll be... It's basically, I think what he's doing, you can fucking etch this into stone, because I think it's exactly what's going to happen. He's going to play out the rest of the season and then announce he's retiring.
So no penalty.
Exactly. He's going to announce he's retiring at the end of the season so that he doesn't have to take the penalty. He can say that he was never suspended, and then he can come back later because they pussied out and did not give him the totally warranted lifetime ban. He'll come back in a few years as a manager and continue to make money. It's insulting. How much he got off the hook is just, it's embarrassing.
And baseball deserves whatever they get from this.
I absolutely agree.
If it turns into the American Gladiators League, where everybody's just roided out, they look like an 80s action movie. Like they look like Far Cry Blood Dragon when they're playing.
I would actually dig
that. I would watch that.
Yeah, if people are going to use steroids, let's go all the way. Let's have it just be like, you know what, just neon everywhere. Like people talking about give the people the air. Do all of that. That's what I want. And just, like, why can't we just split the leagues? You want to use steroids? Cool. You are automatically in steroid league. You don't want to use steroids? You are in the real league.
You know, funny enough, I think bodybuilding does that. I think bodybuilding actually has, they have clean and they have non-clean.
Yeah, I think clean is bodybuilding and then steroid is action movie star.
Yeah.
So I think we've said all we really need to say about that particular subject. So let's move on to our second headline, which is entitled...
Oh, 42 different kinds of wrong.
42 different kinds of wrong. This is a reference to the fact that the Jackie Robinson statue, it's the one with him and Pee-wee Reese, where Pee-wee Reese has got his arm around him, much like that scene in the movie 42. That statue, which is outside the stadium of the Brooklyn Cyclones, which is a farm team for the Mets, actually, was defaced with swastikas and racial slurs. Jacking and robbing are not as sinful as this crime. Also...
Thank you, Jay-Z.
You're welcome. Also, not that skinheads are a particularly bright bunch, but are they still not cool with African-Americans being in baseball? Are they really still carrying that torch? Like, guys, you lost. You white supremacists, you lost. Get over it.
Besides, there's way more Latin players than there are black players.
No, there aren't a lot of Jewish players, though, so the swastika I'm not really understanding so much. But
yeah. Honestly, like it sucks that it happened, but, I mean, this is pretty much all they can do. All they can do is deface a statue and try not to get caught. If they try to exercise any real political power, they can't do that. So you know what? Do it. Fine. Do what you're going to do. But you're still not going to get anything changed, so fuck you.
Yeah, and also remember there are cameras outside that stadium, so you're going to get caught by the hate crimes unit.
Yeah, not to make light of the situation, but did anybody see where Alan Tudyk was when this happened?
That man does have a very foul mouth. But you know, I saw his tattoo, and I thought, he told me that his tattoo was going to be a garden.
It's going to be a maze. Eventually, it's going to be a maze, yeah. I thought you were going to say something.
No, I was going to say it's going to be amazing. But
it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's fucked up. I mean, what else can you say about it? It's
This is a really...
It's dumb. It's juvenile. Have they even caught the people yet?
No, not yet. But
But like I said, there's a camera. It's not going to take long.
For all I know, maybe they were Mexican.
I'm going to say...
What if it's A-Rod?
Probably not. Yeah, it's A-Rod. It's like, this will take the attention off me. Like
A-Rod and Johnny Manziel got together and said, let's do this together, and we'll get the attention off.
You know who you really piss off doing this, though, is Harrison Ford, who still believes he's Branch Rickey because of the medication he's
He should taking. Be Branch. He was so great.
I'm still Branch Rickey, and I want you to have the guts not to paint graffiti on that trophy, you asshole.
Honestly, that was my favorite movie that Harrison Ford has come out in since Air Force One. Like, that was just, he does such a great job. And then he's in Ender's Game coming out in a few months. He's going
to
be really
good. That's true. Written by a bigot. So that's a good way to bring that story full circle. So, yeah, why don't we move on to our... That one's a really easy flag to unite us under. Like, is anybody going to have an opinion other than this is fucked up? No? Okay, next story. What's the next headline called?
Odin's New Realm.
Odin's New Realm. This is actually in reference to Greg Oden, who has finally signed a deal with the Miami Heat after much speculation as to where the oft-injured young player would end up. JC, I'm going to start with you on this one. What do you think about this move?
I like it. He was probably signed to a veteran's minimum, so it's not a huge investment on the Miami Heat's part.
I think $1.1 million.
Yeah. His main purpose is he's going to be there to help them get past the Indiana Pacers. So it's one of those weird situations where, and more teams are doing this, they're managing players' times better. Eric Spoelstra tries really hard not to play LeBron more than 38 minutes a game. And he averages that out throughout the season, so he's fresh for the playoffs. Greg Oden's probably not going to play more than 10, 12 minutes a game the first 6 months of the season. Then come playoff time, he'll probably play 20, 24. But his main purpose is to control Roy Hibbert.
Yeah, so yeah, basically that he's Roy Hibbert deterrent.
Yeah.
All right.
I think it's also, I mean, it's hard to argue with it being not a great move. Like, there can only... Even if it goes bad, it's a $1.1 million bad. Yeah. I mean, they won two championships without him. It's arguably, there's not much more you can add to a championship team, and there's very little risk with it. And the possible upside is, assuming that he could actually make it through an entire season, it's a potentially really big upside. Yeah. I mean, before his last game was what, 2009.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the oldest 25-year-old in the league.
Yeah. he was the oldest 18-year-old in the league when he came in.
Yeah, I mean, he's...
Is he like Robin Williams and Jack? Yeah. Does he age like four times faster than everybody else?
I guess. I mean, he looks
He'll be in a wheelchair by the end of the season.
He looked like Robert Parrish when he was 18.
Yeah.
Wow. I see. My biggest thing with this, though, is it points out just how much Miami needs to offload Chris Bosh. He's just not what he was sold as. They don't need him.
Yeah.
If you're bringing in Greg Oden because Chris Bosh is not enough of a banger where he can really make a difference, why is he still on the team?
I'll tell you what Greg Oden's not going to do is he's never going to stand behind the three-point line and shoot a three-point shot because that irritates the shit out of me every time Bosh does that.
Never say never.
Well, like he might...
Okay. I mean, with his knees, he may not want to get...
Greg Oden might do it like Hakeem Olajuwon did in, I think, the 95 championship against the Knicks where they were blowing them out and he's like, you know what, fuck, I'm going to shoot a three and I'm going to make it. But it's not going to be something where it's going to be like, oh, this is just my shot. No, Bosh. You're a forward. You go in and you actually play down in the paint.
Yeah.
Stay the fuck out of the three point line. I'm sorry. I just hate Bosh so much. I'm just done with that little bastard.
Although I do think assuming that Greg Oden actually does make it through the end of the season, assuming that Miami does repeat and at least get to the finals, it would be really interesting to see them actually face Oklahoma City in the end, because it was the 1-2 that year of, you know, Portland went with Greg Oden. Oklahoma City, or I guess Seattle at the time, went with Kevin Durant, and it was kind of like it really was a toss-up of, man, it could be one or the other.
Were they still the Supersonics when they took Durant?
He was a Sonic for 1 year.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, and I mean, me being a Miami Heat fan aside, the basketball fan in
me... Are you a Miami Heat fan?
Yeah.
Crazy!
the basketball fan in me just wants to see Greg Oden healthy again. He's a great talent when he was healthy. He's just impressive as all hell. All stories like this, I just get impressed. When Brandon Roy tried to come back last year, I was really hoping he would be able to come back last year. I was heartbroken that he didn't. When Grant Hill was going through all of his injury years, You don't want to see a talent like that go through as many injuries as Greg Oden has, or Grant Hill, or Brandon Roy.
Not just that, but also a very down-to-earth personality, too. I mean, he was somebody that you would... He's not a Jamarcus Russell. He's not somebody.
Oh God, I hate that guy. Well, he played for LSU.
I was gonna say, he went to LSU. You should love him.
Yeah, I know.
Oh God,
no, I think he is down to earth. So much so that his knees are made of balsa wood. I mean, he's very, very grounded individual.
His legs are just Pinewood Derby cars.
Pretty much. Yeah,
it's basically sawdust in there now.
Some termites got in there.
Well, let's move on to our next headline, which is entitled...
New Jerseys for New Orleans.
New Jerseys for New Orleans. This is in reference to the fact that the New Orleans Pelicans, recently renamed, have finally unveiled their new uniforms. Funny thing about them, they don't say Pelicans anywhere on them.
Yeah, because I'm from Louisiana, and I like that they have Pelicans, but it's a Pelican. You don't put that on a uniform.
No. I mean the word Pelicans.
No, it's not even on there, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, people are making a big deal of that, but the Brooklyn Nets uniforms don't say Nets on them anywhere either.
No, but they're Nets. I mean, they're essentially like a piece of equipment.
They can point.
Yeah, it's like we're that thing right there. That's like calling us, like, we're the Dallas Hardwoods. Like, yeah, it's what you play on.
Why exactly is it the Pelicans?
Because that's the state bird of Louisiana.
Okay.
Which I only know because I'm married to an ornithologist and we lived in Louisiana.
It's like, I mean, when you think of Louisiana, you have so many things you could base it up. Like, I would love the New Orleans Cajuns. That'd be cool. Like, imagine, like, the cosplay when you go to the game.
Well, yeah, but...
Well, you wouldn't even need cosplay, really.
Yeah, but I'd love to know what you think happens at games.
The hummingbird has to be the bird of some state. You're not going to name your team the hummingbirds.
That's true.
What exactly is very fierce about pelicans?
Well, Scarface likes them a lot.
It's funny, when the name change was announced, either Deadspin or Bleacher Report released YouTube videos of pelicans attacking various types of animals. There's one video in particular where it's at a petting zoo. And this kid is trying to pet this duck, and a pelican comes and just fucking eats it. The duck, not the kid.
Actually, either way would have been impressive.
But yeah, but like I'm thinking, like just off the top of my head, I would name them the New Orleans Huey P. Longs.
Nope.
The New Orleans Corrupt.
Nope.
The New Orleans 504. The New Orleans 504 Boys.
How about the New Orleans Show Me Your Tits?
That's
too far.
That's so far down the line of how bad New Orleans can be.
Show me your
I'm saying it's
offsides.
Fine, but it's so far down the line of stuff that New Orleans does horribly. It's like
82 gift shops that all look the same. The Hurricanes.
The New Orleans Hard Targets.
That
would have been cool.
Yes, the New Orleans Hard Targets. I would have taken that. Totally acceptable. The Marie Laveau's. The
New Orleans Gambits.
The New Orleans. Ooh. The Remy LeBeau's.
The Remy LeBeau's.
Ooh, I like this.
And their cheerleaders could all be rogue.
Holy shit. Get me a phone. I have to call Buster Keaton or whoever the fucking
all of
commissioner.
These are so much better than Pelican.
Yeah. Who's the commissioner of basketball?
Actually, I need
David
to
David Stern.
Yeah, not Buster Keaton. David Stern. Give me David Stern on the phone. Honestly, I don't know why I said Buster Keaton, but
thinking of rogue as a cheerleader, I'm gonna be in my bunk for like 2 minutes.
You do that. And meanwhile, we'll move on to the next headline, which is enigmatically entitled...
No Spin Zone.
No Spin Zone. Okay, so, have you ever seen the documentary, The U? There's a scene in there where they talk about how they came in at the beginning of one season and had to watch this tape about certain types of celebrations that were no longer allowed, and the highlights that were, like, examples of the things you couldn't do anymore were all them. Like, it was just their own highlight reel. So the NFL has apparently got a similar list of things that you can and cannot do. I like to call it the Ocho Cinco list. And they're adding something else to the Ocho Cinco list. And that is spinning the ball after a touchdown. Now, let's not be hasty. They're not going too far because you can only be penalized 15 yards for unsportsmanlike conduct if the ball that you spin hits somebody. I mean... How arbitrary is this fucking rule?
Yeah.
You know what? And if I'm the other team, I'm running at that ball. You spin it on the ground, I'm going to dive at it. Oh, and hit me!
Honestly, if I'm the coach, I'm saying, you know what? Throw it in their fucking face. We'll take the fucking penalty. And as I get the penalty, I'd have middle fingers in the air at the refs. Do what you got to do.
Well, you don't want to do that for a first down.
Well, I mean, if you score, I'd be like, look, okay. When you score, as long as it's not the college rule that if you jump into the end zone, they call the touchdown back, I'd be like, fuck it. Y'all do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah.
The more elaborate, the better. I will give you an extra $1,000 out of my pocket just to fuck with the refs.
Now, I believe our friend JC has been looking up other things that you can't do according to this really weird rule.
Yeah, the NFL was nice enough to clarify exactly what it is that they did. A lot of people came out and were against this rule today. And so the NFL, in a really strange move, came out and said, well, these you only get penalized if you do this at an opponent. But they did list the things. These acts include, but are not limited to, sack dances. The home runs.
Whoa. You mean like after you frag somebody in Halo? Is that a sack dance?
Yeah, it's a sack dance. You can't teabag anyone.
Okay, all right.
The home run swing.
What? Okay.
Yeah. The Incredible Hulk.
Whoa!
Snow!
Yeah. What the hell is the Incredible Hulk?
Which is funny because
it's just flexing.
Yeah, no, it's the DeMarcus Ware, like the pound, like the.
Yeah, but what's funny about that is the rule says you can't direct it at someone. But what's to stop a player from going or stepping right in front of him as he's flexing?
It's gonna be like drawing the pillar, like drawing a charge. Did he get in front of him at the time?
First of all, is this a list of illegal celebrations or WWE moves? Because this is kind of ridiculous. What else continue, is on the list?
Spiking the ball.
What?
Yeah.
The most basic celebration known to man?
It really is.
Come on.
Throwing or shoving the ball.
How do you shove the ball?
I don't know.
It's a ball.
That ball had it coming. It's...
pointing.
I give up. Fuck. You know what, NFL?
Hold on. There's more. Pointing the ball. Oh, verbal taunting. The military salute is on this list. Standing over an opponent prolonged and with provocation or dancing and or gyrating.
Okay, first of all, you're turning the NFL into the town from Footloose, and I don't appreciate it. Also,
the military salute. What is
okay, you have a military day where you have players come out and hold the or veterans come out and hold the fucking flag. You have done so much to promote the idea, totally reasonable and awesome idea, that, you know, soldiers are heroes. So now, during that day, we can't salute after a touchdown? That's going to seem a little hypocritical, don't you think? I'm just
saying. Well, it's a sports league that's hypocritical. My God, it must be a day anyone will watch.
Thank God.
It's the no fun league.
And the really stupid thing about it is, the more rules you make against... The more specific you make it, the more... I guess the more inventive they're going to get.
Yeah, they'll just come up with something else.
They're going to come up with something else, and it's going to be even funnier.
Yeah. You know,
I was going to say, first of all, I didn't hear anything about cell phones... Yeah. Or autographing, or pretending to play golf with the ball,
or shitting a ball.
Doesn't say you can't dunk the ball over the goalpost.
Yeah, I heard the Lambo leap was like on the chopping block, but I didn't hear anything about that.
What if, as a consequence, they come up with like more elaborate, like Adam was saying, you have like Mortal Kombat, like fatalities after.
They're just going to decapitate the opponent?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think
pull their spine up.
Well, for a long time, the choreographed celebrations have been banned. So there's like the super kick that somebody... like
Johnny Cage's shadow kick.
Two players will like do a kick at this. It's fucking stupid.
No super kick.
No Hadoukens.
You know what? I feel like there should be a blanket exception for any offensive...
For players who want to use blankets in their celebration?
No. Okay. Always bring a towel.
Yeah.
But for any player who's an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman, whenever they score, do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, when a 350-pound guy scores, he should do whatever he wants.
Enjoy it, big boy.
Yeah, do whatever you want.
You earned it. Enjoy the oxygen celebration you need to do after that.
No, but if you watch like old things of, I think it was, I feel like a horrible sports fan because I'm blanking on the name, Willie Payton. When he would score.
Walter Payton.
Yeah. This is why I'm a bad sports fan.
He has the fucking ruse, man. The greatest athletic shoe of all time.
Well, like, whenever he would score, he would
Jordans.
He would give it to the offensive linemen so they could celebrate. And that was just a cool moment. So I think if a clause should be, okay, well, you can't celebrate. You're subject to these rules. But if you give it to a lineman, they can do whatever the fuck they want. And you can take part in it.
They're like your proxy celebration.
They're the designated celebrators.
You have my enthusiasm in escrow, so please. Yeah, I don't... this is dumb. All of this is dumb. And in the meantime, there's no hitting or touching or saying mean things to the quarterback at the moment in the NFL. They're thinking about getting rid of the kickoffs.
Whoa, what?
Yeah. Every year they talk about the possibility of getting rid of the kickoffs.
Yeah.
So, eventually, and I think there's a South Park episode that nails this, eventually it's just going to be a pillow fight with shin guards. You know, like, it is ridiculous. I don't like it. I just don't care for it. So, let's finish out the news with the last headline, which is entitled...
Football on your phone.
Football on your phone. The Manning brothers are at it again. I will say this, and again, this is just going to sound like bias. Peyton Manning is one of the... funniest fucking athletes.
He is.
He really is. He's got like this goobery charm that seems to work for him, and the commercials they've written for him are hilarious. Not to mention the fact the time he was on SNL and had the greatest fake United Way commercial.
Like, open your fucking eyes, man.
You missed that easy pass? Get in the porta potty.
I can't even look at you. You know what? Go sit in the porta lab for 20 minutes. That's right. You stay in there.
Get in the... Why is the door open? Close the door. Do you want to lose? Because you do see those United Way commercials where they, like, athletes are playing football with little kids. And he's like, he'll like take a snap. He's like, get open. Get open. And then he throws it directly at this kid's stomach. The kid starts crying. He's like, do you want to lose?
What was even better about the football on your phone is that Archie Manning shows up.
Oh, right, yeah. So football on your phone is the DirecTV commercial in which Peyton appears with his brother Eli in... I can only really describe it as it's the NFL doing Lonely Island.
Yeah.
Because the two of them have these terrible wigs, and they're rapping about being able to watch football on your phone.
Football on your phone.
It's football.
Your phone, that's what I said.
It's football on your phone, you can watch it in bed.
While you're buttering a scone, football on your phone. You're on a date with Simone,
football on your phone.
You take a small business loan, a football on your phone.
It's like, imagine football is milk, and that girl's blouse is your phone, and you spill it on your phone.
It just like keeps right on going, and then Archie shows up, also sporting a terrible wig. Oh. And so here's the question. Is this funny or sad?
I think it's kind of sad in that no matter what you make Eli do, he's always going to look like a mouth-breathing dummy.
Well, you're not wrong.
Yeah. I was going to say, everything you guys said in positivity about Peyton is like, it's like he took all of that from the family.
Yeah.
He left nothing for Eli. Except championships.
Well, yeah.
I'll take that trade-off.
Yeah, I'm not as funny as you. But I got two trophies.
Boy, in defense of Peyton, the only reason Peyton didn't get that second one is that the Saints said the only way to beat Peyton is to make sure he can't play. So I blame
Hurricane Katrina personally, but that's fine. You know, that's cool. I'm glad New Orleans got a Super Bowl. So I don't know. This is one of those things that just tickled me, and it's specifically because it does remind me so much of a Lonely Island sketch. And you're absolutely right. There is something genetically wrong with Eli Manning. Just something is... He looks like a white Bubba Gump a lot of the time. And,
oh, shit.
Or not Bubba Gump, but Bubba...
Bubba Hotep?
No, the Bubba from Forrest Gump. Bubba... I forget what his last name
was.
Oh,
Bubba. I don't know.
Just Bubba.
My name's Bubba. I like shrimp.
He does look like Bubba from
It's Forrest not so Gump. Much funny when you say Bubba Gump, though.
When he's... Yeah, it's like the two of them got married in New Hampshire.
Eli Manning is shrimp.
I never really did like Jenny. I don't want to go back to Greenbow, Alabama.
Well, that's going to do it for the stories, and now here come the scores.
In baseball, the Tigers snuck through the Stargate before the Indians, beating them 6-5 in 14 innings. And, in a Twilight Zone creepy similarity, the White Sox also beat the Yankees 6-5, and the Reds beat the A's 6-5. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. The Braves proved they were also the Bolds, holding off the Nationals 6-3. The Astros gravely disappointed their fans, losing to the Red Sox 7-5 after holding the lead late. The Pirates didn't need any rum to thwart the Marlins, winning 4-2. And the Dodgers blasted the Cardinals like womp rats 13-4 during, no joke, Star Wars night at Busch Stadium.
All right, and those are the scores, which means it's time for us to go into segment two. We're going to take a little break first. But before we go to break, I do want to let you guys know that you have spoken and we have listened. And I am officially announcing that we are going to do a SummerSlam commentary.
Woo!
WWE Yay! SummerSlam. Woo! So that will be on August 18th, which is a Sunday, and we will be broadcasting. We'll have all the details. We'll put up a little post about it. We'll be broadcasting starting about half hour before the first match. We are going to do a better job of actually watching the matches and covering them because we realize that not everyone is going to be spending money to pay for SummerSlam. Hopefully what you'll be tuning in for is us being giant dorks and drinking a lot of beer, and, you know, we'll bring you the highlights of all the matches. I am really excited to see Daniel Bryan versus John Cena. I haven't bought a pay-per-view since 1998, so this is going to be a big deal. I'm really excited for this.
I'm really excited to see Jake the Snake Roberts. He still wrestles, right?
Yeah, he wrestles with drug addiction every single day, so, and he's always losing.
That's what Joke is.
So stick around for our second segment, our main topic, which is a fun one this week. And remember, there is no I in Avengers.
It's football on your phone, so now is your chance.
To have football on your phone and football in your pants.
Look at this guy using his phone as a phone.
Your phone ain't for calling,
your phone's for football.
It's football. question. What do you get when a football gets down with your phone?
It's football on your phone. Uh-huh.
Welcome back, all you tacos and frittatas. It's time for our main segment. Our topic of discussion this evening is The League.
The League!
The FX comedy series about the worst people that you know.
They really are the worst people.
they're worse than O'Doyle.
They are worse than O'Doyle. That's absolutely true. But if you haven't seen this show, I can understand why, from the outside, this might appear to be a show that's not for everybody, because it is about a group of guys who play fantasy football. The thing about the show, however, and this is, I've gotten this from so many of my non-sports fans' friends, you don't have to know anything about the game of football whatsoever to appreciate the comedy, because, as I said before, the show, what it's really about is that love-hate relationship you have with your best friends sometimes. We're all sports fans, so it might be a little, but I, you know, like, for example, Chris, who is the most anti-sports person. In fact, the joke that we always make is that he's going to pop his head in on one of these podcasts, just be like, are you guys still talking about sports? Yeah. Okay, bye. Because he really just has no interest whatsoever. And even he really enjoys The League, because, again, you don't really have to know anything about sports in order to enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm not that big of a fantasy football guy, but I love that show. It's just, it's consistently funny, and it captures that sort of dichotomy between most guy friends, where it's like, I really like you, but the only way I can express that is by being the biggest dick possible.
Yeah. I think Kevin, the character Kevin, said it best once, where he just stopped for a moment and went, I hate my friends!
Yeah, it appeals to non-fantasy football fans, but me being... I think basketball is my favorite sport. I think this is well known. Probably my second favorite sport is fantasy football, followed by NFL football. That's how much I love fantasy football. Yeah, and so, yeah, this show...
And yet, we still can't draft Gandalf. I don't understand that. It makes no sense to me.
Yeah, but this show is fantastic for people who really love fantasy football, because a lot of the jokes that people may not necessarily get, hilarious. The how much you hate when somebody drafts a player that you want. Yeah, it's just... amazing.
Have you ever rosterbaited?
I've done a little roster baiting myself.
I've actually never gotten a good enough roster to where I always end up with shitty drafts.
It's like, oh my god, Andre Peterson in the fifth round. Oh my god.
I did when Cameron Newton was a rookie.
Andre Peterson?
Yeah.
Like Adrian Peterson?
I was going for Andre, like the Dre.
Yeah.
See, you just officially became the Andre of this small group. I was actually wondering. I was like, here's what I might open the
Child,
segment.
Please.
I thought I might open the segment by saying, here's who each one of us represents. And then I thought, no, I'll hang back and let people walk into their own designation. So congratulations, Elliot. You are the Dre.
Hey, if I get to be with Shiva, I will take that honor.
Oh, my God. You're right. Oh, Lord. Anyway, JC, you were making a point. I'm sorry.
I was going to say my most impressive draft was, for some reason, I had a lot of faith in Cam Newton his rookie year. And I drafted him really late when, for some reason, I'd forgotten to draft a quarterback that year. And he turned out really well.
And for anyone who doesn't really understand what fantasy football is, it's exactly like Dungeons & Dragons. I mean, essentially what you're doing is you're putting together a fellowship. You're putting together a fellowship, and you're culling that fellowship from all of the best players of all the various teams.
You have my steroids.
And you're choosing these players based on stats, based on things like initiative and... agility and healing. And things like tackles per game and touchdowns and sacks. And I mean, like, it's all about creating an ideal universe where you control everything. I mean, it's very similar to Dungeons & Dragons in that way.
It's all about beating the shit out of your friends.
Yes, and it's for competitive people. I mean, that's the thing about this show, is really these characters are just so uber competitive that it makes them assholes to each other. Because they
and everybody around them.
Because they've decided that this homemade trophy, the Shiva, so-called, because it has a picture of their school's or their class's valedictorian, Shiva Kamini Somar Kundarkam, who grew up to be exceedingly hot.
Smoking hot.
Oh, my God. But essentially, it's just about that trophy. And they've put so much emphasis and so much weight upon winning this trophy that they become completely cutthroat with each other.
Yeah,
but even so, I think that based on their personalities, these are people who probably would be assholes to each other anyway. But I guess fortunately and unfortunately, if you are this kind of guy, you tend to have these same kinds of friends.
That is a great point.
Like you tend to have, like, if you are kind of the guy who shows your affection by being the asshole, like, I like you, therefore I'm going to make fun of you, or I'm going to make you, I'm going to show my, I don't know, I'm going to show my appreciation of you by belittling you.
Because that means you're tough enough to take it.
And I hope you do, you do the same thing to me.
By going balls deep in you, as Ruxin said in the pilot episode.
He's talking to his baby, it's like, they think they're going to go balls deep in Daddy, but Daddy's going to go balls deep in them.
Yes, he is. Again, in that first episode, they try to decide the draft order by, they're at their daughter's birthday party, and all their friends are having a sack race, and the kids are numbered, and they hand everybody a number of, like, a different kid, and whoever gets the kid that wins picks first in the draft, and the parents of the little girl whose birthday it is don't pick her, because she's not very fast. They put winning the first pick in the draft over actually supporting their own daughter.
Yeah, I like how somebody points out to Kevin, it's like, you didn't even pick your own daughter. He goes, it's good, because she's not very fast.
Well, it's just like, oh my god, the best thing is, like, they end up in these situations because they're so competitive. Like, the one where Ruxin had that child, the Oracle.
Oh my god. It's
also in the pilot, yeah.
Who he calls the special needs Harry Potter. Let's see. I'm going to try and I'm going to break down who all's in the show. First and foremost, which is really interesting to me, Mark Duplass, who is sort of a filmmaker in the mumblecore, like kind of a groundbreaker in that sort of weird subgenre, plays Pete, who is sort of the, what do they call him, the patient zero of lies. Like, he's a really funny dude. He's very charming, but he also just has no problem manipulating people to get what he wants. And yet you like him the entire time.
Isn't he the one that, and I use this term because it was used on the show, the one that trade raped Andre?
Yes, oh, yeah. Yes. And I mean, they all kind of make a habit out of trade raping Andre. Andre, by the way, is sort of their punching bag, and he brings a lot of this shit on himself. And he's played by Paul Scheer, who has been in a number of different things. He's currently on a show called NTSF SD SUV. On Adult Swim, which sort of makes fun of all the procedural cop shows. And he's been in a number of things as well. And he's the punching bag. He's the guy who will dress in all Ed Hardy shirts and terrible fedoras and buy the worst artwork and furniture. And
that is still worth being with Shiva.
Yeah, somehow he still gets to sleep with this ridiculously hot... You look at the actress who plays Shiva. Look her up, because... Oh my goodness. But he's also a huge dork. Like, he does things like, I do urban foraging, where I go out and I just find plants to put in salad. Like, oh, I found these under an overpass. And, oh, I make mixtapes. And, oh, look at, it's just like...
What about the time he framed the joint that his friends had given him, but it was actually pubic hair?
Yeah, he framed the first joint on which he ever got high. His friends not telling him before this that joint so many years ago was actually pubic hair rolled up in some paper.
But the thing is, it makes complete sense, because when you're in a group of friends like this, and I honestly speak from experience...
Wait, why did you say like this and not like that? Why were you looking at me when you said
that? I was going to refer to myself, actually, because, like, I used to be the Dre in a group. Because, like, I had very...
Used to.
No, it was like, I had very low self-esteem, so I thought, well, any friends are better than no friends. So, like, I would let people crack on me, and to the point where I developed out of that. But if you're in a group like this where people make fun of each other, you're going to have that punching bag. You're going to have the leader, you're going to have the sidekick, you're going to have the punching bag, and you're going to have the complete dick, like Ruxin. And then you have the guy who's sort of in the group but just wants to get laid all the time, like Taco.
Taco is sort of the stoned-out dope of the group, so to speak. He is just the guy who doesn't quite get it. He's really about is getting laid, getting high, and starting terrible businesses.
And I think the great thing about a character like his is there also is always one of those people in that group. He's the guy who just really just doesn't give a fuck about anything that you guys are doing. Like,
and then he'll beat you anyway.
Yeah, and he's the guy who is ambivalent to everything you're doing, and he can still win and not give a shit about it, but he does like the fact that it pisses you off.
Those are the most frustrating guys. And there really is one in every league.
There is. Yeah. There's always some guy who... They show up to draft, and they take the players that were just given to them.
Yeah.
Like, they pick the highest one that was in the order of what was available. They weren't even there for the draft, But yeah, they just inherit. They can inherit a very shitty team. They could be the shittiest team, and they're the. And this happens in season one.
Yeah,
which is such a hilarious. It's such a hilarious episode. Is they always have at least one game that just totally fucks up somebody so bad.
Yeah, yeah. Like all you needed to do based was this,
on,
and you
based
failed.
Based on pure luck.
I think the first episode sums up his entire character when they ask him, hey, who are you going to draft? And he says, Joffrey Reynolds, running back, Calgary Stampede. And they're like, no, not Canadian football. You have to pick American players. So he's like, okay, then Darren Sproles. And the guy behind him is like, Darren Sproles, that's who I was going to draft. And they're like, well, I'm sorry, he took him. Like, he didn't know who he was.
Fuck, if he would have picked like Joffrey from Game of Thrones.
He doesn't know any better. Yeah, and Taco, John LaHoy, he was somebody I actually knew before the league because he would go and make these internet, and they worked this into the show, but he would make these parody songs and these joke like music videos.
Tell me more, Cargo.
Show me your genitals.
Show me your genitals. Yeah, where was this video where he was like dressed in this terrible like thrift store fashion, the kind of stuff that would make Macklemore go, dude, really? And he was just like, women are stupid and I don't respect them. That's right, I just have sex with them. Show me your genitals. You're like the worst rap ever. But I think my favorite of his was called Regular Everyday Normal Guy. And he's like, I'm just a regular everyday normal guy. My parents are really nice people, motherfucker!
He sounds like a proto Jason Segel.
Yeah, he's like, you know, he just made these great videos and we used to laugh about him. And then it took me probably two or three episodes to realize, oh, wait, that's the regular, everyday, normal guy, isn't it? And it only because they ended up doing a video. Like, he does these sometimes where, like, he'll either end an episode with something or it'll be a plot point that he'll do one of these videos.
Because
like,
to expand upon that, he does these, like, infomercials.
Yes.
And my favorite one of those is he's like, your job sucks. Try not giving a fuck.
That is a good method.
It's like 5 minute long commercial about all these situations that are frustrating. It's like, just try not giving a fuck.
Yeah, he does this thing where he's like, oh, hi, I didn't see you there because I was busy doing business stuff. And then he's just like putting a sandwich into a file cabinet.
Well, what about the one where it's like Kevin's wife, she's like, oh, well, I'm proud of my pussy. He's not going to cheat. And then he makes a song about...
called Vaginal Hubris.
Vaginal Hubris.
She's got vaginal hubris, vaginal hubris. According to her vag, all other pussies are useless. Vaginal hubris, vaginal hubris. Her pussy confidence is unbreakable like Bruce Willis.
Hey, hubris has come back as a theme on the show.
The best kind of hubris. And,
by the way,
best kind of hubris.
Anybody, I don't care who you are, look up vaginal hubris on YouTube and just you know, tell me thank you later.
Yeah, not the term, but the video that they made for the league. Like, there's not like a Wikipedia for the concept of vaginal hubris.
I say both, you know.
But
there,
maybe
there
both.
Could be.
And the other guy is Kevin, who is played by Steve Ranazzisi, who I'm sad to say I've not really seen any of his stuff prior to this. But he's the one who's married to Jenny, who's played by Katie Hazelton, who, apart from being gorgeous, is actually married to Mark Duplass.
Really?
In real life. Yeah. The two of them actually wrote a horror movie recently called Black Rock that she directed. The whole thing with Kevin and his wife is that it's in the first season, she's sort of running his team because he's kind of a fuck-up. Like, he really wants to win, and he's really into the game, but he can't stop making mistakes or bad luck. So she sort of coaches him, and it becomes kind of this big deal where she's not technically in the league, so he doesn't want anybody to know about it, but everybody kind of knows that she runs his team. Yeah. So
she's like Azula and he's Zuko.
Right. And then you have Ruxin, who is possibly my favorite character because he's the biggest asshole in the group.
He is, but like he actually is, he's an asshole, don't get me wrong, but he actually like tries his best to be a good husband. Because he's like, well, my wife doesn't want me to watch porn because she thinks that's cheating, so I'm going to watch this bra video.
But see, but I think they kind of back off that as the show goes along, because it gets to the end where he's like, I don't want to get a divorce because I would have to spend...
more time.
I'd have to devote 100% of my attention 50% of the time to my son. Right now I'm rocking like 30%, 50% of the time. You can't beat those numbers. And he's like, also, I would have to pay my wife to get pounded by other dudes, which she would, because she's smoking hot, and I look like a Nazi propaganda cartoon of a Jew. Those are his words. And, like, the whole spiel that he goes on, like, Nick Kroll is a stand-up comic. I've seen some of his stand-up, and he does these really bizarre characters, and I don't know what's going on with it, but I do really like him on the show. And, of course, his casting means the show's greatest guest star to date is able to be cast, and then it's Jeff Goldblum who plays his father.
That's right.
Yeah.
the progenitor Ruxin is incredible.
He must have been a fly on the wall.
Nick Kroll has this face that he makes, and they call it the Ruxin face, where he kind of like twists his lip. It's almost like the opposite of a duck face, because it's like this really judgmental, like, twist male face, and Jeff Goldblum nails that. Like, there's a scene where they're standing next to each other and both making that face, and I could not stop laughing. It was amazing. But yeah, basically what we have here is we just have a hotly contested Shiva trophy, and the means by which the teammates or the competitors are willing to go in order to secure that trophy. And that's really the crux of the show. And they do have professional athletes kind of come in and out. So if you're just watching an episode or you just tune in when an athlete comes in, you probably think, oh, I probably have to know who this person is. But there's always a reason they're there. And that reason is always explained, and they usually even tell you what team they play for. So you really don't have to know dick about any of the lineups of any of the actual sports teams.
No, I mean, they're, like, the great thing about this show is they're actually meaner than the ones on Always Sunny. Like, at least they seem like there's a line, but, like, with the league, there's only one line. The only line they have is they won't mess up your marriage. They'll try their best not to do that. But everything else is like, look, fuck you, I want to win. Like, there was an episode where Ruxin and Kevin, they're both lawyers, and they're negotiating this prisoner's time, and he's like, well, we got him robbing 3 liquor stores and literally waving to the camera. It's like, well, he's going to go, I have him for 10 years. He's like, well, did you do it? No, didn't do it. So he's like, we're trying to get him off. He's like, well, how about this? You give me your first pick, drop it down to 5 years.
Yeah, it's this weird sort of, and the guy's sitting in the room like, hello? And they're like, respect the sidebar. And they're just like negotiating this guy's time in prison based on their own personal fantasy.
It's like, how many times are you going to get raped?
Yeah, how plausible is that? Not the rape, the lawyers negotiating.
But not in front of a client. And I haven't done this because I'm not a DA and I'm not a criminal defense lawyer. But if you know the person, because the prosecutors have a lot of power, like, because they can recommend what the filing should be. That's actually, that could happen. I don't know if it has, but that could really happen if they go.
Oh, well, in that case, I'm sure it's happened.
It could be like,
if it can't happen, it's happened.
Yeah, it's like, because, I mean, the prosecutor has so much power to say, well, we'll charge them with this and not this, so the maximum range is down from 10 to 5. And there's really a lack of control on how you get there. So there might have been a fantasy football situation where it's like, I want your first pick, and fuck you, and we're going to drop him from 10 to 5, because like, honestly, the lawyers care, but they sort of don't, because it's like, well, what am I getting out of it?
Yeah, so Ruxin lost Adrian Peterson in that trade, so
he got screwed.
Yeah. Oh, so the other day I'm watching the 4th season, like the first episode, and a doctor, this is funny, a doctor makes the comment that they're thinking of drafting Adrian Peterson first, and he goes, anybody that would take Adrian Peterson before the 3rd round is an idiot. No athlete has ever come back from an ACL surgery to have a successful season. And it's funny because that episode aired right at the beginning of the 2012 football season. And I was just like, holy shit, watching this now, that guy was completely wrong, but yeah, he's totally reasonable in that argument. It's just that Adrian Peterson turned out to be a beast.
Yeah.
It's for when they air, it's actually really topical to the time frame of NFL season. Even when the NFL lockout happened, the season started with them wondering, well, what are we going to do if the NFL's in a lockout? And yeah. So, yeah.
I'm sure they were pretty nervous about that, because no NFL kind of means no the league.
Yeah.
Actually, interestingly enough, because it wasn't just Adrian Peterson, it was also Jamal Charles, who also had, like, a big comeback season from season-ending injury. Yeah. And those would have been going into the 2011 season, those would have been two of the bigger picks for that season.
Right.
And they ended up, well, actually Adrian Peterson happened very late, so he still actually had a pretty productive season despite that, but Jamal Charles had it very early on in the season, and both of them came back from, for running back specifically, very, usually career, not necessarily career ending, but career ending from going down from a superstar to usually like a very good player at best.
You're not the best, you're more of a solid back.
Right.
Yeah. You watch enough football and hear about injuries, you'll become very familiar with the name Dr. James Andrews, who's the best knee surgeon in the world. He's repaired all the knees that have come back from to be great. Adrian Peterson, Derrick Rose, pretty much any great athlete who's torn an ACL, Dr. James Andrews has fixed his knee.
Why do people keep tearing that music festival we do in Austin every single year? I don't understand that.
Because it sucks. And it's horrible.
Because it's not as good as Fun Fest.
Seriously. Indeed. It's a sidebar.
Sidebar.
I cannot explain to you how much I hate ACL.
And yet you're going
to
try.
I'm going to.
No, respect. I'm sorry. Respect the sidebar.
Thank you. It's hot. It's dirty. It's a bunch of dirty people listening to music when I just want to sit down. I'm old. I just want to sit down and listen to some music.
Seems to always rain every year.
Thank you. And then it's like, oh, it's a mud pit. Motherfucker, I go inside not to be dirty. There's a reason I could be muddy all damn day.
So you're actually more like a Ruxin. I don't know. You're a wild card, Elliot. I don't know what to do with you just yet. So the other character we really need to talk about is the one played by Jason Mantzoukas, and that is Rafi. Brolo
El Cunado.
Yeah. He is Ruxin's brother-in-law, who is, what is the best way to... He's a filthy sociopath. He's a filthy sociopath.
Does he happen to have a lisp?
He's a filthy sociopath, Elliot, you fuckwad. He's always trying to start a knife fight or fuck anything that moves, and I do mean anything. He's insane. He's also the actor who plays Dennis Feinstein on Parks and Rec, if you're familiar with the cologne magnate Dennis Feinstein, who changed his name from, what was it, Dante Fierro, because it was exotic in Pawnee to be named Dennis Feinstein. But yeah, and Rafi is, he's that great loose cannon character that you always hope that you get to write, because the guy is not bound by the laws of society, or nature, or physics. Like, he just kind of appears everywhere whenever they want him to.
Yeah, he's that friend that we're all sort of in our late 20s, mid-30s. But he's that friend you have from college that you can't really get rid of. He's like a bad wart. You're like, I really don't want to not stop talking to you, but you're sort of a dick.
I think my favorite thing that he has ever said was to Kevin. He comes in and he goes, do you still have those sex toys with Bert and Ernie's faces on them? Oh. And Kevin's like, you mean my daughter's bath toys? And he just goes, she should not play with those. Those should be burned. It's just...
Talking about Rubber Ducky.
He shows up. Like, when he shows up on this series, they're drafting in Vegas, and they're, like, in this awesome suite, and they've got their draft board up, like, at the poolside.
They're up at the pool, yeah.
And he gets up there, and he's like, yeah, I'm in the league! And he turns to the board and goes, what is this?
you guys realize there are girls behind this, don't you?
Which, again, like, if you're somebody who doesn't play fantasy football, that's the exact reaction you would have. Except that he's really excited about being in the league and being part of it, and he just turns and goes, what is this? Oh my god.
And I like that the only reason he's even in the league is that Ruxin wants to get laid so bad by his wife, he's like, well, I have to let her brother be in the league.
The thing about Rafi is he's such a disgusting human being that he even makes sexual jokes. He makes sexual references to his sister, like, I could watch her walk away all day. Please tell me you're hitting that. And Ruxin's like, you mean my wife?
Your sister.
Your sister? And then there was that, this is going to really offend anybody's relatives who are listening, but when they thought that Ruxin couldn't get Sophia pregnant, and Taco was like, I'll have sex with her for you, and then Rafi was like, no, I call dibs, and it's like, dude, it's your sister. And then he's like, I know what let's do. Let's mix our jizz, like a big frothy jizz milkshake.
And that'll talk about drinking your milkshake.
Put it up in her business, and she'll have the most awesome kid ever. And it's just like, oh my god, Rafi is horrible.
And that's not how biology works.
He really is, like, episode to episode, you never know who he's going to injure, or what deplorable thing is going to come out of his mouth.
What about the time they found him, like, basically living in a box or something? Like, they went to Rafi's place, and it was just basically just this destitute, horrible place.
It was
place.
Like a boiler room.
Yeah.
And there was, like, a bucket, and they couldn't tell if it was for his shit or his cooking, or, like, yeah. they couldn't figure out what it was. And I think my favorite Rafi moment of all time was when he shows up in the back seat as Pete's driving around with Kevin on the roof holding the Shiva, and he just, like, starts punching him in the balls, and the car hits an ice patch, and Kevin goes flying off into a snowbank. Rafi jumps out of the car, runs, knees Kevin in the crotch, and then as he's running away, just goes, MURDER! What the fuck just happened? But, I mean, that's what's great about that character, is you can literally write him to do or say anything, because... And there was a scene where Ruxin's like, so what have you been up to? I took a shit in your yard. What? Nothing.
Okay, before we forget, the first two seasons are on Netflix. So if y'all have Netflix,
first, I think it's three,
three seasons.
Oh, yeah, first three. Go watch them now.
Do it right now. Just, before we spoil everything for you.
And the great thing is, it's so funny. You can like what I was doing. I was playing State of Decay last night, and I watched the entire first few seasons.
You were doing playing what?
State of Decay. It's a zombie game. It's a game where you go out and gather resources. You fight zombies. But you can put that on mute, but like you can pay attention to the lead because it's really cool. And I'm gonna stop talking.
No, dude, it's just like multitasking like a beast. I can't really do anything. But I can't do
I can't do anything.
No, I'm completely inept. No, it's just I can't do multiple things at once. I'm not so much somebody who can divide their attention. I may be a bit of a frittata. It's quite possible. I'm not going to put it past
you're
me.
You're easily Kevin. Oh my god, are we doing the Sex and the City thing right now? Are we?
Yeah, no, we're totally it really is the male equivalent of Sex and the City.
No, that was Entourage. Because Sex and the City was an idealized version of a woman's like 20s. Entourage is the idealized man's
20s. Yeah, but the thing about Entourage is Entourage is
nobody can relate to having a friend who's a famous.
Yes, it's actor. Not Entourage does not relate to people on a basic level like Sex and the City did, and the way that The League does, because everybody has friends like Ruxin. Nobody knows a fucking movie star that they can pal around with. Nobody has the problem like, oh, Seth Green's being really mean to me. Like, nobody has that fucking problem.
I have heard that from, I'm not going to name names, but I have heard conversations like that.
Right, but what I'm saying is you don't have friends that are like, yeah, I was at 21 last weekend and fucking Seth Green came in as being such a dick and somebody in his entourage fought somebody in my... It's just like...
Yeah, we don't know anybody who gets in a fight with Eminem. Yeah,
I mean, I like Entourage, but it is super Hollywood navel-gazing. Yeah. Whereas The League is definitely about those people that you know who... You love them to death, but they're horrible human beings.
I yield to you, sir.
See? You are Andre.
okay.
I keep going back and forth with you. And anyway.
Am I like a really bad version of He-Man where I go from Dre to Ruxin where it's like, well, shit.
It impresses me that you think Ruxin is the He-Man of that situation.
He's a badass lawyer with a hot wife. That's like the goal.
He's a lawyer with a hot wife.
He's an okay lawyer.
he works at a high-rise Chicago firm. He's doing okay.
But he's also the one who doesn't get the Chicago Bears... legal counsel. He ends up working with some blind guy who smells like old cheese.
Does he get fired?
No.
Then if he survived 2009 in that culling, he's a good guy.
Alright. These are things I don't know. Thank you, Ellie, for filling me in. Do we just want to mention briefly our favorite, like, overall episodes here?
My favorite is when Kevin paid Taco to dress up as
Mr. McGiblet.
Mr. McGiblet. He walks up there with an axe. He's like, well, I couldn't find it.
So Ellie has this toy that's definitely based on Tickle Me Elmo, and it's called Mr. McGiblets, and it's like this Muppet that dances, and it's like, dance with me and rub my belly. And and Kevin's daughter plays with it so much that it drives him insane that he decides he's going to rent a Mr. McGiblet's costume and let Taco sneak into the house while she's sleeping, scare the shit out of her, and then she'll never want to play with it again.
But...
Which, by the way, stellar parenting.
I think it's a good move.
So, unfortunately, Taco gets high and decides to... And he comes in and she's like, yay, Mr. McGiblets is here. Let me give you some stuff. And she starts giving Taco all the valuables in the house. Yeah. And then he just takes off.
And the cops see him walking on the street. And so at the end of the episode, when Kevin's walking in with the costume... The cops have been staking out the neighborhood and just tackle him. It's like, we got this fucker.
That's a damn good episode. I like that one quite a bit. JC, what do you think?
I like the season premiere of the second episode when Pete comes up with the way they're going to do the draft order, and it's by going through the airport security line.
Whoever gets the airport security line first. Yeah. After he's handed, who is it?
Kevin hands Ruxin a package.
He's like, here's your birthday present or something. And it's ticking.
Yeah.
As you're going through airport security.
Yeah.
And he's like, it's a joke bomb. It's clearly a joke. And then what do you call it?
The TSA?
TSA guy's like, sir, stop saying bomb in this airport.
Yeah. And my favorite part is when Pete, like, rushes through the line, throws a suitcase over, and pushes an old lady through the metal detector. So naturally, TSA takes him away. But he won the race, so he's like, you can body cavity search me all you want. All you're going to find is Tennessee running back Chris Johnson.
Which is funny, because now we're like, Really?
Hey, hindsight's 20/20.
I guess so.
But a cavity search is priceless.
Yeah, Adam, you're relatively new to this show, right?
More or less, yeah. I've only watched the first season. So I was going to pick the Mr. McDiblet's episode because it was also the episode that we talked about earlier. I believe it was, anyway, where... it was the Antonio Gates episode.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was the Antonio Gates episode.
Yeah.
So,
where Ruxton... That's what's funny is... Okay, so the thing about... The thing you need to understand about people who are a little too into fantasy football...
Like
is they,
me.
They start to get mad at players for doing well if they're not on their team.
You sit the fuck down!
As if that player's sole occupation is to help them win fantasy football.
It right? is, though.
He said with complete and utter conviction.
So San Diego Chargers tight end Antonio Gates shows up in this episode that Adam's referring to, and he's unfortunately the guy that's just... He's on somebody else's team. Playing against Ruxton, so he's just been ravaging him, and he's got all these points.
Like four touchdowns.
Yeah. And so Ruxton starts yelling at him for doing so well. Like, he meets a professional athlete, and the first thing he does is start yelling at him. I mean, it's priceless and kind of sums up, you know, like we were talking about, some people who are way too into fantasy football.
It's one thing that's brilliant about that episode, because that type of scenario happens most with tight ends. Tight ends, at most, are good for 10, 12 points a game, but every now and then, a guy like Antonio Gates will explode for a 30-point fantasy game, and it's usually always when he's playing against me.
I like how you say,
and he's usually always playing for Taco.
Yeah.
He's always playing for
this
Taco.
This is the best thing about fantasy football is that you can say he's playing against me.
Yeah,
right.
It gives you that sense of belonging in the team that you don't get in the NFL like you would get in college football if you went to that university. Like, you know, I'm a Tiger. I went to LSU. Fantasy football gives you that investment.
Yeah, like right. I'm not one of these fans who, when it comes to my favorite team, I say, "Oh, we won the championship or we won this." But Antonio Gates is always playing against me.
Fuck that guy.
So JC is clearly our Ruxton. so that's two down. Adam, is there anything else you wanted to say about that episode?
Well, no, there's very. I mean, it's actually a great episode, which for reasons we've already talked about. The only other episode that I can think of that I would have said beyond that one was the one where they. I believe it's Kevin's wife is trying to have like a part. She's trying to host everybody.
Ruxton's
wife. Ruxton's
wife.
Yeah, sorry, Ruxton's wife.
Like having this big dinner party.
Exactly. Big dinner party, or just a day like a Sunday. We just want a Sunday where there's no football, no sports, no nothing. And they didn't understand going into it that they agreed that there was not going to be any football.
Yeah.
And
so she keeps bringing out dish after dish.
And they're like, just
what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, they get into the dining room and they're like, so we just take the food into the living room, sit in front of the TV. Yeah.
She's like, no, you eat. And they're like, the fuck, dude.
God damn it, Rooks.
And they've all got their phones out because they're not watching the game, but
they don't have football on their phone.
They're all
football on your phone.
That's a callback.
And they're all pining over this one really insignificant player who's just busting out for that one game, and they're trying to get him for the trade. Just so they can win that just that one week.
Yeah.
So that's a great episode.
That is a great episode. I think I'm going to have to go with... I think I'm just going to call it the Brown Note episode. The Brown Note episode. Where Taco has all these leftover Vuvuzelas from the World Cup.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
He decides that he is going to use them to create the Brown Note. And he does it at a party. And everyone starts shitting themselves. Like... Insignificant. All of this is insignificant to Rafi's reaction. That is the final note of the episode. He starts to, like, they're all, like, doubling over because they know they're about to shit their pants. And Rafi just goes, sometimes when I shit, I come. And then he looks at Kevin and goes, and he calls Kevin,
Brian.
He calls Kevin Brian. He's like, Brian, look at me so I can finish. And Rux is like, just look at him. And then Kevin turns around and Rafi just gets, like, the most insane grin on his face and goes, Happy New Year!
Please watch this show.
Oh my god! I don't know. I think I don't know who between Adam and I is the Kevin and who is the Pete, because I think Chris is definitely our Taco, the guy who doesn't know anything about football and the other thing.
No, believe me.
I think even Chris would
Murphy
be happy.
Is Taco.
Murphy is more like.
He's not Raffy, is he?
He's kind of our Raffy.
Just yeah. Foul mouth.
The things that, you know, it's funny you mentioned that because it's like the things that come out of Raffy's mouth, I'm like, I could hear Jason Murphy saying that in any given Rage
That's
Select.
That's true. Like, if I go to Rage Select, it's like, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, our friends at Rage Select are doing, not really a Kickstarter, it's like what we're doing with the subscription service, which I will mention again in a moment. But they're doing one, and you should definitely support it at RageSelect.com. Go check it out. But, yeah, the Brown Note episode for me, just that last moment with Raffy, is just, like, everything I love about that show all rolled up in
one. Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
I'm saying that next time.
Yeah. And, again, this is, like we've been saying, this is a show you don't have to know a single thing about football to appreciate.
Yeah, I first heard about it on a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen that used to be on another site. Where Martin was talking about it, and he's like, you know, I don't know anything about sports.
And I remember hearing Martin say that and going, are you serious? You like that show? That's awesome. You don't like football.
Right, you don't need to like sports, you just need to like assholes being assholes to other assholes.
Yes.
That's it.
Entirely. That is entirely the truth.
So if you like A-Rod, you'll love this show.
Oh, there you go.
If you like people being an asshole to A-Rod, you'll like this show.
So if you're human.
I also think there is a certain Seinfeld crossover in that in any given episode, you will have a moment where they christen an awkward event or a certain type of person, and they assign, you know, their own kind of nickname for that. The only other show I've seen that does it as much as The League is Seinfeld, where it's like, well, she had man hands, or
she's a low talker.
Yeah, exactly.
The white knuckler.
Yeah, the white knuckler, exactly.
That's bad naked.
It's funny. It's like if Seinfeld were allowed to be totally blue because it was on FX, that's exactly what it would be. I mean, they come up with some horrible names for people, some horrible sort of monikers for different types of people and different types of situations.
You hit upon a really great point, because what it makes it a very good spiritual successor to Seinfeld is that they do that, but also Seinfeld would always have a moment, unlike Always Sunny, where they sort of recognize, wow, this is horrible what we're about to do. Ah, fuck it, we're going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
And so like they do that in the league. They're like, should I really get Ruxin caught when he's jacking off to bras? The bar video?
The bounce test?
Yeah, fuck it. We're going to get him caught.
Yeah. I just, you know, this is, like I said, it's a great show. It's a show that appeals to a much wider range of people than it might seem initially.
And it's a show that stays with you. I find every couple of weeks when I eat Taco Bell like I shouldn't, I inevitably find myself a few hours later screaming, Obagoya!
Yo, Obagoya! The taste will destroy ya! The cheapest bucket of beef in Illinois ya! Yeah, I have the situation arise myself. Just like, oh, you all go out.
That actually reminds me, though, also, Chicago's a beautiful, this is going to seem like a non-scurrier, but Chicago's a beautiful city, and one of the things about the league that's so great is it's set in Chicago, and they really do a great job of showcasing that city, because it doesn't get a lot of attention in pop culture. It's usually just New York, L.A., you know, a little bit of, Oklahoma's getting a really sort of a push lately, but Chicago.
Lately, do you mean from 50s musicals?
Well, I read too many comic books, and Thor, I think of Oklahoma with Thor.
Really?
Yeah. Because that's where it was originally set.
Ah.
It wasn't New Mexico like in the Thor movies.
Well, Kevin Feige taking some liberties, I guess.
I'm a traditionalist. I don't know.
There's a great episode where they're tailgating at Soldier Field, and you're right, there's a lot of different Chicago locales that are featured on there. So, anybody have any kind of closing thoughts on this show?
I've already had my Chicago tourism segue, so I'm going to be
quiet. Yeah, no, the city of Chicago thanks you greatly for your support, Elliot.
I was thinking of payoff. What can I say?
Watch The League on Netflix.
Listen to JC.
Listen to JC. And hey, guess what, guys? We have decided that once the NFL season starts up, here at Inside the Locker, we're going to be doing our own fantasy football league.
What?
And I think, we have to look into the exact logistics.
What the fuck is this?
What
the fuck?
What is this?
I'll take RG Roman numeral 1 3 times.
Yes.
RGIII.
I didn't see the first two, but I hear he's good. But yeah, I think the way we're going to do it is that the four of us are each going to kind of be captains of a different, or not captains, but we'll have a team in a different division, and then we'll just kind of keep winding down and winding down. And you, the fans, are absolutely, like, what we'll do is once we get it set up, we'll be like, hey, message us if you want to play along. Even if you don't know football at all, that actually might make it more fun, because you could end up being, like, the Taco Dark Horse, who's just like, I'm picking solely based on names. This name sounds awesome. I'll pick that guy.
And therefore, you will be my sworn enemy.
You will be JC's sworn enemy.
Well, the great thing is about fantasy football, you have the people that don't take it serious, and when they lose and you beat them, you can be like, I didn't even care.
Yes.
How much does that burn?
Actually, it would be really interesting to see like, an entire league of tacos.
An all-taco league?
You want a Taco Bell family pack?
Yes, yes.
Like, all third stringers, just because they got awesome names. And
but then they all go
total scores kickers. Of, like, I won 20 to 15.
My team was all kickers.
That's not I like Adam Vinatieri.
I'm going to pick every single coach. All the coaches.
Well, that's another thing they always do to Andre is they get him to draft players who are either retired or suspended or in jail.
Keyshawn Johnson. Right,
Has anyone drafted Keyshawn Johnson yet?
No, I don't know. That's great. Well, he retired 3 years ago.
Who was it? It was Plaxico Burress.
Plaxico Burress was in jail and he tried to draft him. So, yeah, just something to keep looking forward to. We will have more information on that as it gets closer to football season. And once again, on the 18th, we will be doing our WWE SummerSlam commentary. So if you were already planning on purchasing that pay-per-view, please do so and tune in to hear our commentary. If you're not, but you still want to hear us act like drunken idiots live,
it'll be fun.
Go ahead and tune in. Well, like I said, we'll have more information on that as it gets closer to time. And before we go, I do want to mention that we have added a subscription service function to oneofus.net. Now, keep in mind, your listenership is really all we're looking for, and we greatly appreciate it. But it does cost money to run a website, unfortunately. So if you feel like giving, you know, we have levels, you know, $2 a month, $5 a month, $10 a month, $25 a month. Keep in mind that the way that system works, if you just want to make a one-time donation, you can do that. You can, like, for example, you can say, oh, I want to give $10 a month. But if all you're really comfortable with giving is $10, you can go ahead and make that donation and then cancel the monthly billing cycle. And that way you only given the $10. And also, it's not a necessity. You're not going to be locked out of content if you don't give. We're not charging people for that kind of stuff. I mean, the only thing we're going to charge for individually are the Watch a Movie With Us commentaries, which we just recorded one over the weekend that is fucking great, and I can't wait for you guys to hear it. But the thing is, with the subscription service, it's just a way for us to try and keep the lights on here and keep things moving. I mean, audio hosting, unfortunately, is a big expense. We're not making money off of this. We're just trying to not have to pay money in order to keep doing stuff on the site. So it's right there on the sidebar. Respect the sidebar. You'll see the subscription options, all the different levels that you can contribute. If you want to keep doing it for multiple months, we certainly appreciate that. There is absolutely no requirement that you need to do that. It's not a mandatory thing. We're not going to require you to subscribe to keep hearing these podcasts. Nothing like that. It's just a way that if you want to give, if you want to help us continue to put out content for you, it's just an easy way to do that. So keep that in mind. But that brings us to the end of another episode of Inside the Locker. I wanted to remind you once again that we are available on iTunes as well as all the One of Us content. Just search for One of Us in the podcast section. You can follow the show at ITLcast. You can also follow us individually. I'm at Bry Guy Salisbury.
At IT Elliot.
At JCDeLeon1.
At the_beef.
The beef.
The beef.
Beef. And guys, thanks again for your questions and for listening in. And once again, we highly, highly recommend The League, which is on FX, and the first 3 seasons are on Netflix. And until next time, keep in mind,
Shiva Kamini Soma Kamada Krav Shiva Kamini Soma Kandarha. Hey!